Blog Talk Radio.
Become a member of the Movie Geeks United family. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/moviegeeksunite, Facebook at facebook.com/moviegeeksunited, YouTube at youtube.com/moviegeeksunited, or bookmark our website at moviegeeksunited.net. And you can also access our entire library of programs, including more than 600 filmmaker interviews, right here on Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/moviegeeksunited. Geeks United, we've got a live show tonight. It's been a little while since we've done a live program. We normally do them recorded, but tonight we're live. I'm Jamie, and I'm here with my co-hosts Jerry and Dean. Let me bring them on. Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up?
Hey. Hey, how's it going?
Hey.
Hey.
Good show tonight. We've got actor Paul Giamatti. What's your favorite Giamatti performance, guys?
American Splendor definitely comes to mind.
Oh, yeah.
John Adams.
American Splendor for sure, but it's so difficult to choose from Paul Giamatti's performances because every time I remember seeing him in, the first time I remember seeing him was in Private Parts.
Yeah, I think that's when a lot of us saw, the first time we saw him.
Yeah, he was great that.
He is, Pig Vomit. I remember seeing him in little bitty roles, even in things like Saving Private Ryan and stuff like that.
Right.
And then, when he became a lead or a lead supporting actor, I just love that guy. He's just the greatest.
It's Sideways.
Yeah, he's great.
Sideways, of course.
I mean, that's quintessential. But, I mean, even in something like Duets or something, he just has screen presence. There's something about him that, even in The Nanny Diaries, I mean, he just has screen presence, I mean.
He does. I love Duets, too. I think, I just like that movie just in general. But he's great in that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's very good. And actually, he starred in my favorite movie of, I think, 2 years ago, which was Barney's version.
That was my
number one movie of 2010, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we talk about that.
That's one I still haven't seen, so I still have some Paul Giamatti ahead of me.
It's a great performance. I mean, he ages like 30 years in it. It's perfect casting, too, because Dustin Hoffman is cast as his dad in that movie. That's a great like father-son kind of
that
casting.
That was number one, right, that year for you?
Yeah, it was.
And
yeah.
I went to go see it, I guess it opened finally the week after we did that show, and I was just blown away by it. That movie was just so incredible.
Yeah, it's a good emotional movie. And we'll be welcoming on Don Coscarelli, the writer-director who's responsible for really popular fan-driven movies, like Phantasm and Bubba Hotep. And they've actually collaborated on a new movie that's now available on demand everywhere, and it just opened in select theaters this weekend. It's called John Dies at the End, which has to be one of the great titles as well.
It is great. It's like it's a title that has a spoiler in it, which is immediately fascinating. By the way, I should say this, that Phantasm has been a favorite of mine since I was a kid, 1979, watching HBO, watching it late at night. Oh, my God. That movie still kills me. I still think it's one of the 10 greatest horror movies that's ever been made.
Oh yeah. Oh God. Yeah, definitely. Just Dean, since you're on, and I might get into trouble for saying this, but I just wanted to congratulate you on the documentary you worked on.
Oh, thank you.
This afternoon, and your musical choices are spot on. The editing's good. The whole thing is good. It's just really inspirational, and I think it's something that needs to be seen by everybody. Because, I mean, I think everyone on the show can say we've gone through some pretty rough times. But you watch this, and you realize there are people out there. You know, as they say in the documentaries, that girl says, one of the volunteers, there are people who are, you know, worse off than you. And
yes.
I just think what this guy's done, Nick Seafood, right?
The director of the documentary and the director and the producer of the documentary and the cameraman is named Rich Gedney.
Right. No, I was just talking about the guy though. It's about though the.
Well, yeah, it's about Nick Aliendo and his efforts to. He runs a seafood restaurant here in Atlanta on the West End, and you know, and it's relatively successful. It's been there for a little while, and he spends the documentary is called Every Other Sunday,
yeah.
And he spends every other Sunday getting together groups of people to help him feed you know. They hope every time they go out to feed at least 250 of Atlanta's homeless people every outing, and I've participated in volunteering a few numerous weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So has Rich, the director.
And Rich has done it's incredible. It's filmed by him. Just an incredible job.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, it's a single camera shoot for him, and then I came in and helped
mm-hmm.
him pare it down editing wise, and then helped add some music and do some sound work and things like that. And
so this is on YouTube.
Yeah.
Is it available on YouTube?
Vimeo. Yeah. I don't know if it's available in public yet. But when it does go, I mean, it's just really inspiring. Really
every other
inspiring.
Sunday.
Yeah.
Every other Sunday is what it's called. Every other Sunday .. feeding Atlanta's homeless, you know, the colon. And I mean it's a really good little piece. It's like it's only about 20 minutes long, but it really gives you the feeling of like being there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
totally.
So that's neat.
Yeah, and Rich is a great
really
fan of the show. Rich is just such a loyal fan of our show, so please check it out.
He's been great
to
us, yeah.
Please check it out when it's available.
Here's a headline that popped up today. The Producers Guild Award for Argo now cements that film as a front runner for the Best Picture Oscar. The Producers Guild gave out their awards last night, and they presented their version of the Best Picture to Argo.
Mm-hmm.
Golden Globes gave it to Argo. The Critics' Choice was Argo. And keep in mind that the Best Picture Award at the Oscars is actually a producer's award.
So this is the... I think you were right then. You were right last night when we talked on the phone.
It's looking like a front runner, right? Now?
It is. I would
any?
Say it is a front runner.
I guess so. It's completely surprising to me.
Well, not really. Let's look back just a couple of years ago when we had another Ang Lee film, Brokeback Mountain, and then you had Crash. And if I'm not mistaken, Paul Haggis was not in the director's category, was he?
I can't remember either.
Because I was drunk watching it, so I don't remember.
I do remember that even the Crash filmmakers were surprised that it didn't go to Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, because
you know?
Everyone just figured going in it was going to be Brokeback Mountain and then Crash 1, but I don't think Haggis was up for so this is not unheard of that you can have a Best Picture winner with no director nomination.
You know what, though? It was funny. This reminded me of David Letterman had a top 10 list the other night, and I guess there's this new fat-burning Pepsi that they're testing in Japan.
Oh, God.
It's like a fat-burning Pepsi with fiber in it, and he's like, oh, that sounds great. So he started a top 10 list of other, like, rejected colas. And one of them was Brokeback Mountain Dew, the first gay soda. That was great.
That was good.
Anyway, that, just
that is funny.
Reminded me of that. So, yeah, you know, this is what's so exciting about the Oscars this year. There are very few sure things. I mean, this is the first year in a while that I felt like it's this much of an open race for
right,
a lot of
yeah.
these categories. It's great. As a viewer,
yeah,
you want that.
It does make the race exciting, and maybe Argo is going to win it, but what the hell is it going to win besides Best Picture? I mean, what is it going to win? It's not going to win screenplay. It's not going to win an acting award.
Yeah,
it's not going to win director,
obviously. That's something odd, too. That's something odd, too.
That's
but
something
I think
odd,
that,
too, but I don't think we should belittle it because of that. Argo is sort of this – Argo is a summation – And just bear with me here, of films that have come out over the last decade that people have made these very political bent films, whether it be Syriana or Good Night and Good Luck and everything. And I think Argo is the, like, you know, the summation of all these historical films, new interpretations of recent events. And I think Argo has the best shot of really doing this.
Could it possibly be the first Oscar nominee, Oscar winner, Best Picture Oscar winner, since Grand Hotel back in the 30s to win only Best Picture and nothing else?
Wouldn't
it's a
that
good
be
company,
something?
Then. It's a good Ooh. Company. You couldn't ask for better company.
What else did Crash win? Did Crash win any of the other major awards?
Crash won editing.
Okay.
And screenplay, I believe. That's
oh.
where Paul
well,
Magnus
Argo could win editing. I mean,
it could.
Because the same editor that did Argo did Zero Dark Thirty. And I personally think Zero Dark Thirty will get it. But I could see it going to Argo just as well.
Well, I mean, both. Let's say the third act of both of those films are very riveting. And that's, you know, so that's, I think it's going to be a toss up between those two. Now, it could be, is Lincoln up for editing?
Probably. You know, and you know, Daniel Day-Lewis seems like a lock now, but if he doesn't win, for whatever miraculous reason, I can see Lincoln being another Color Purple for Spielberg. No, because it's going to win screenplay, I think, no matter what.
You think
but,
that's going to get adapted? Do you really think?
I really do think it will.
Okay.
Because
yeah,
it's
so
the most literary. You know, it's the most
yeah.
literary of all those screenplays, and they normally give it to that caliber of movie. Literary.
Well, I guess Argo could win the screenplay, the original screenplay, and then it could win editing, so it would pretty much match Crash in that.
I think it's up for music too, right?
It is up for music as well.
Adam in the chat room says, just want to say that I'm really psyched about this show.
We love you,
I
Adam.
Really appreciate all you guys putting these shows together. Looking forward to hearing Mr. Giamatti and Coscarelli. Every guest
Thank
tonight,
you, Adam.
Every guest tonight, their name ends in an E, in an I, but it sounds like an E. That was the theme of tonight's show, I think. We planned that.
two great Italian-Americans. So.
That's right. So tonight, actually, the big news from this past week, I don't know why I said tonight, the big news from the past week is, again, Star Wars. You know what? I have a feeling that for years to come, we're going to be saying, the big news this week has to do with Star Wars. But they finally settled on their director for Episode 7, and that director is J.J. Abrams. Apparently, he's the savior of all reboots, so... He's rebooted Star Trek, and now he's rebooting Star Wars. Part of me surprised just because I didn't think there'd be such a monopoly on every geek franchise out there for it to go to just one guy.
Yeah, I mean,
of me is just ambivalent. I mean, I don't really care.
No, I told you last night my main reservation, which I said on the show many weeks ago. I just don't want to, on my deathbed, knowing, God damn it, I'm going to miss a Star Wars film. Bad enough I'm going to miss James Bond films after I'm gone or whatever. Those will go on forever. But a Star Wars I really thought would go to the grave with Lucas. This scenario that he would sell the company because he's such a control freak, it just never dawned on me. And so, all right, we have Abrams.
I think it's a life choice, you know. I think he just got married or engaged to be married. I just think he's ready for, you know, the last chapter of his life away from all this madness of Star Wars.
I think you should have just given it all to Coppola and let Coppola make That's what I would like to see. Coppola make all the Star Wars movies. But
all right, well,
that would be amazing.
OSLCX in the chat room says he likes Abrams' work on Star Trek, but he doesn't trust Abrams. Do you trust him to pull out a good Star Wars?
I trust him to put out a good Star. That's not the question. I mean, here's the thing. Here's what I'm learning slowly through a lot of people. Even if, let's say, in the best of all possible worlds, at one point it looked like David Fincher or Matthew Vaughn, you know what we have? You know, it's not that this rumor has it that George is going to be a lot more involved than anyone thinks.
I'm sure he's going to be deeply involved.
He's never going to be hands-off in any way. So, now,
no.
Having said that, the thing that's interesting about Abrams is very secretive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you know, we with Star Wars used to be very secretive, like with Return of the Jedi, but in the age of the Internet, there's no way they could be secretive. And now they say he's going to probably be fighting with Disney marketing, like don't release all these products, and Star Wars is the godfather of all movie merchandising. So how can you keep any of this hidden? I mean, this movie, I would imagine, will come out May, Memorial Day for 2015, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, probably.
Let's
just
say that. Okay, starting in April, you're going to see, or even as early as March, toys and books and comic books that are going to be tie-ins to this. You know, they're going to want to push these as early as possible. So that's going to be interesting. I want to see, and also you're looking at another thing that Abrams is very good at is viral marketing. Cloverfield is a great example of viral marketing. And we'll have to see. It could be really cool, or the worst it can be is just really ordinary. And my thing
you use the term the Godfather, and I actually think that will be George Lucas's role. Like he's down as like a distant creative consultant on the project, but he's really going to be like the Godfather.
Right.
Like they're going to come to him and say, you know, do you think that this is in keeping with the legacy that you've created, and
mm-hmm.
do you approve my Godfather? You know, they're going to
kiss his
ring and all that kind of stuff. There's also something interesting for me with J.J. Abrams in that he rebooted Star Trek to everyone's satisfaction. I mean, most people love what he did with Star Trek. And I think a lot of the reason for that is he came in as not a Star Trek fan.
Right.
So he came in just very fresh to the franchise. He made a movie that he wanted to see. But he's coming into Star Wars as the ultimate geek Star Wars fan. So I don't know if it'll be completely kind of slavish to the feeling of the original films, or if he's going to go for something brand new and exciting. That's the big question.
He should go for brand new. He should
what
do brand new.
What is the direction of
no,
the
I disagree. I disagree. He should not be brand new. He should be setting the first three films, and I'm talking about the first three movies.
He does, in one sense, he has to.
Hold on a second. He should be studying those films and studying what Lon Crane, and especially what Kirshner did
mm-hmm.
with those two films, and studying how to remove himself from the equation, and actually putting the series first and foremost into his mind. So seriously, no lens flares, you know.
No, nothing like that, of course.
Put one or two in there. You can put one or two in there, but please.
Man, that lightsaber is going to be particularly blinding under J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. But let me say this, though. He sort of has to come in and do something new. Because Star Wars, as much as it is a brand and everything, is something quaint about it. Something that you really, in a post Christopher Nolan filmmaking world, you really have to do something big and daring. You have to do something you really, I think he has to, even if, you know, like the original, don't get me wrong, the original trilogy is the go-to trilogy of trilogies, but you still have to, you have to remember in Return of the Jedi, they're running out of ideas. they bring back the Death Star and a planet full of teddy bears.
Well, I agree.
But
that's a story level, not on a direction level, though.
Yeah.
That was the original title of the film, actually, A Planet Full of Teddy Bears. It was not Return of the Jedi. It was like the original Ted is what actually Return of the Jedi was.
That would be a good movie. That would be a great movie.
Yeah, but here's the conundrum, and you guys have expressed it just there.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to do it old school. No, he needs to do something completely new with it. I mean, there is an element of this where he can't win. All he really needs to worry about, make a good movie, and then that'll shut everybody.
Story. Have something that's going to propel you to want to come back and see 8 and 9.
Yeah.
That's true, but I just hope that there's enough of the old school there. I'll take a combination of the two, but I don't want to see it completely like ridiculously new, you know. But in saying that, I have to say I loved his take on Star Trek.
Yeah.
And I thought he did a terrific job with that. So that's positive, and I think that's what got him the job.
Okay.
You don't think it was Super 8?
No.
Okay. All right.
Super 8. Yeah, you can tell how impressed I was with that movie. Anyway, I have no problem with him. He seems like a nice guy. I've seen him interviewed many times before, and he seems like a true movie fan that'll do it justice. I mean, as long as he feels comfortable with it, I'm sure that most fans will feel comfortable with the finished project, you know. So.
Well, of course, there will always be complaints, and there's going to be complaints, and it'll happen. So, but
yeah,
I mean, they're a lot richer by the time these movies come out. That's all I'm saying.
There will be a lot of complaints, but people complain about anything.
Yeah,
and essentially, any of those people that complain, that just live to complain about this, they're like their lives are ending, like the last series of films. Oh, you ruined my childhood. First of all, grow up. Secondly, you know, you couldn't do any better.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't do any better.
That's how I feel.
That says it
all.
Okay, let's get to our interviews for tonight, and then we'll do some. We'll look ahead to 2013 movies because honestly, I have no idea what's coming out this year, and I'd like to find out during this show. That's my mission.
I did some research. So.
Okay, good. We will all benefit from the research that Dean has done after these interviews.
Yay!
Actor Paul Giamatti. Writer-director Don Coscarelli. They have a new movie out. It's called John Dies at the End. It's the, how do I describe John Dies at the End? It's a trippy movie. Well, it's completely trippy, and it's obvious from the first frames that it's not anything you've seen before. It's like a story of some underground street drug and how it causes hallucinations, and you don't know what's reality and what's not, and it's all these time dimensions. And I mean, it's a crazy, crazy movie that keeps you on your toes as a viewer. Paul Giamatti's actually kind of like the voice of reason in it, so he feels like a big balance in this pool of madness that is the movie. And it's totally visionary, and it's amazing how they shot this on an independent budget because they accomplished some extraordinary things. But we spoke to both of them about John Dies at the End and some other great stuff from their career. And the first interview you'll hear is Paul Giamatti, and then it'll go to Don Coscarelli. John Dies at the End is available now on demand systems worldwide. I'm sure worldwide. That's available worldwide, right? On demand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would think so. And it's open in select theaters starting this weekend. Here's Paul and Don.
Someday you will face the unimaginable. It is physically impossible to avoid it.
You got my attention, Mr. Wong. This slack stuff, this sauce.
You can see things you shouldn't be able to. If I show you what's in this container, you'll never feel at one with the human race. Realized all at once, my one chance to save the universe lay inside this bottle.
It be opening doors, the final world is mine. What is that stuff, John?
The soy sauce?
That stuff. I'm remembering things that haven't happened yet.
We were chosen by the soy sauce.
So you guys are what? Some kind of spiritualist exorcist?
Something like that.
I feel like Don Coscarelli's movies, pretty much all of them are pretty original. I mean, he's got a very, very unique way of going about things and a unique tone and sort of vision, and he just follows it through. And I feel like all of his movies are not like anything else I've ever seen. So that was a huge part of the appeal and made me very eager to be a part of making this. Yeah.
Yeah, and you had actually first met with him for Baba Nosferatu, was it?
Yes. Yes, I had.
And you know, you can admire a person's work, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the two of you will gel creatively. So what is it that makes that possible for you two?
I think we have a similar sense of humor to some extent. I don't know. I mean, there's just something very, you know, and I appreciated when I actually worked with him, I appreciated the way I knew he was going to be like this. And he's incredibly efficient and in control and gets the job done. And I really like that kind of thing. And he's that kind of guy. And, you know, so there was that. And then I just think that there's some similar sensibility in certain ways. It overlaps. I don't know. And it just, I mean, it's not just that we were lucky that we got along together. It's just that to get the opportunity, you know, you see these things you admire, and you know, 90% of the time you don't ever meet the person who made it or whatever. And so it was just great to be able to get the opportunity to do it with him.
Yeah. And I'm curious from an acting standpoint, if it's more difficult to play the reality of a scene when the reality of the movie is so outlandish?
No, I think part of the pleasure is that it's so outlandish and it can be real and you can go there. I mean, I enjoy outlandish things. I always have, you know, when I acted on stage, I always liked doing oddball out there things too. I like it when it's unreal, just as much as, you know, it's fantastic to play the real circumstances of something. It's the fun of it is doing something completely bizarre and absurd. That's really pleasurable to me. You don't get to do it a whole lot. And so I find that more exciting than not.
And you've really got to, I don't know how to put this delicately, but you have to not be afraid to feel like a fool, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, in general, to be an actor, you have to not be afraid to look like a fool because, you know, I mean, you're potentially going to look like a fool doing most anything. But you definitely, with this stuff, even more so. And you know, again, part of the pleasure, you're absolutely right. You're going to look like a fool. It's foolish and fun. That's part of the idea. So,
yeah.
You know, you definitely can't have any qualms about that. But I feel like if you have any qualms about that, you shouldn't be an actor, you know, because you're going to look like a fool at some point, no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I can't imagine reading this script for the first time and thinking to yourself, how in the world is he going to realize all of this madness?
The really bizarre thing is that we had been talking about doing this Baba Nosferatu movie, which was in its own way complicated, but nowhere near as complicated as this was. And when the money for that fell through and he put it aside, he gave me this script and I read it and he said, yeah, this will be actually easier to do. And I remember just thinking, how the hell could this possibly be easy to do? I was like, how the hell are you going to do the dog driving the car? Any of this? How are you going to do the meat? I mean, all of it was just, it seemed so audacious, so unbelievably ambitious. But he was really confident that he knew exactly how this was not going to be easy to do. And it wasn't easy to do, but I was amazed at how much, yes, it proved to be that he knew exactly how he was going to get the meat monster made. And he knew exactly how he was going to do Korok and things like that. And
wow.
It was amazing. Amazing. Wow. It's a hugely ambitious movie. It's a movie that should cost bazillions of dollars, actually, but it didn't.
I feel the same way when I saw it. And speaking of seeing it for the first time, what was your reaction? Was it, did you see it for the first time at Sundance or earlier?
Yeah. I'd seen it along the way. When I would be out in L.A., sometimes I would always stop by and see him, and he would show me stuff cut together. And I don't think I ever saw the whole thing cut together where he was editing it. But so I was familiar enough with it, but I had not seen it screened like that, all done, everything done like that. And it was great. You know, I've almost never been so pleased about something I've been a part of to see that it came together like that. I mean, it's heroic that this thing got pulled off the way it did. You know, I mean, it really is just, it's just fantastic. I'm incredibly pleased it came off the way it did.
Yeah, and it's the kind of movie that, hardcore fans and geeks like me are going to definitely gravitate towards. And I feel the same way about American Splendor, which happened closer to the beginning of your career. Do you feel that kind of presence when you make a movie that taps into a fan base?
Yeah, sometimes you can feel that, and it's a really nice thing. Totally, and that's a good... American Splendor had that feeling to it, too, that you were really appealing to somebody who really... to people who genuinely, deeply love this stuff. And you want to do a good job for those people, too. You know, and you don't want to disappoint them. So it really keeps you honest about it in a nice way. But it is a very nice thing to do. Yes, actually, yes.
You know, and you've had, obviously, you've been in massive movies, you've been in independent movies, including, I have to tell you, one of my all-time favorite movies is actually Barney's Version.
Oh, thanks. Glad you like
so
that.
Incredibly moving to me.
Thank you.
Is there a freedom that you're afforded in independent films like John Dies at the End that might be missing from the big studios?
It depends, you know. I mean, it's all. Yes, I mean, certainly the higher the money level goes up, the anxieties become different. You know, I mean, the lower it is, it's just a question of logistics. You can't get everything done you'd like to get done, but there often is much greater freedom. You know, the reason you don't have any money is because the movie's weird and you're going to have fun. You know. And as it goes up, it can be less fun and you can feel less freedom, but... that also depends on the guy making the movie. I mean, I always think that you can do tiny little movies and they can feel not fun. And you can do a big, huge thing. I always think of Planet of the Apes that I did, which was a gigantic movie. I mean, just giant. But Tim Burton did not make it feel like it was a giant movie. I mean, you felt like you were making John Dies at the End in a funny way. Mm. Even though the studio was putting a lot of shackles on everybody, him and everybody else, The face-to-face dealing with that man was so much fun. He was such a fun guy to be around, and he was having such a good time. His pleasure was in standing there with the actors and coming up with weird stuff. You know, so suddenly it felt like a small movie you were doing with this wonderful man, and so he made a difference. So, it's all just a case-by-case thing.
Yeah. Well, I had, like a lot of people, you'd first garnered my attention probably 15 years or so ago when you played a Pig Vomit.
Yeah. Well, that was another example of a movie that was, that woman was, remains one of my favorite directors I ever worked with. That was so much fun doing that movie. She only cared about the actors, and she was so much fun. It was great.
Well, and this is the last question because I know you're pressed for time. But several years later, you kind of hit your stride with Sideways, and your career went off in an exciting new direction. But you've been acting a long time. Does it mean something different to you today, the pleasure you get from it, than it did at the beginning of your career?
Yes. I mean, in some ways, you kind of want to come back and recapture some of the pleasure of what it was like at the beginning of your career. That's what you start to realize again. And in some ways, yes, it just, like I say, you know, having a good day at work with good people becomes its own reward in a way. You know, to be able to just have the simple pleasure of working with people that you're enjoying. Yeah, it means a lot to be able to have that kind of thing happen over time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me.
That answers your question. I think that
absolutely does. I think I only had 10 minutes with you, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. Sorry, man.
Okay. Thank you so much. I love what you do. So thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You don't know the name of the drug? Robert called it the soy sauce, but now I'm thinking that was just a nickname. It's not actually soy sauce.
Wait, Robert?
Kind
of... Oh, right, yeah, the fake magical Jamaican. What was his last name?
Marley.
Ah, of course, Robert Marley. And that guy's the one who gave you the...
You're in the Mumbo parking lot, right? Just pass around a joint. That Jamaican guy just pulls out this sauce. He goes, it'd be opening doors to other worlds, man.
Did anyone else take it?
That stuff. Dave, I'm remembering things that haven't happened yet. I mean, that didn't happen.
John, answer my question. Did anyone else take the sauce?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to say. He went to Robert's trailer. Ain't and those guys, they didn't want to come. I think they got freaked out when they saw a needle come out.
And you still actually tried that shit?
Are you kidding me? How could I not?
This is such a unique, fresh, wildly inventive movie, and that's what I'm most thankful for. It's not a movie that I've seen 1,000 times before. Is that what appealed to you about the source material when you read it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you were so right on that it was definitely different and strange, and yet amazingly creative and inventive. There were so many... you know, images and concepts just in the book and dialogue lines and monologues for characters. I just loved it. And it just seemed to me like it could make something really different and fresh. And I'm so happy to hear somebody like yourself say that about it. It just makes my day.
Having not read the book,
yes.
I wanted to know if it was painful at all, what you had to drop from the book.
Well, I think I came up with a pretty simple solution as to how to adapt this 350-page novel into a 100-page screenplay. But I think that there's no question that some sections were lost, and good stuff, wonderful elements, which, you know, maybe could be, you know, fused into a sequel one day. But in any case, there was just no other way to do it. And yet from the first reading, I could see that about the first third of it played just like a movie and then had a pretty good ending. So I basically cut that section out and then just went straight to the ending and then had to make a few changes to make that work. But to me, it seemed pretty like a simple way to attack it, and it seemed to be okay. But the problem is that, you know, the writing was dense. There was monologues for some of these characters that were just magnificent that I actually shot, and some of them are in the movie and are great, like with the detective or with the Giamatti or with the Rastafarian. But then some of the other ones, I just for time length, I had to let go, and that was heartbreaking.
Mm. But one of the aspects of it that makes it so unique is that it so successfully blends the comedic with the horror elements. And it seems to me that those are two releases, I mean, similar kinds of releases that you're getting from an audience. Is that a tricky thing to balance those two elements?
Well, look, no question, because there's like some, you know, inherent benefits and similarities to the two emotions, really, and I have been exploring that for many years with my other movies, because I learned right on that very early on, like with Phantasm, like if you were successful with a scary moment and you could get a response out of an audience, then they immediately go into a laugh afterwards. So there's some sort of connection there, because, you know, they're both releases in different ways.
Yeah.
Another challenge of making this movie was, you know, just tonally, you know, because, you know, it's not easy to have a movie be, you know, funny in one moment and then scary in the next.
Yes, yeah. Well, and I'm wondering how you modulate that. First of all, in terms of performance, do you start it at a kind of a higher pitch and make it more subtle in subsequent takes, or how do you do that?
Well, I think you're on to something there, because it was something that I was doing throughout, which was bracketing performances. Because if I came to an area where this tone issue was giving me grief, what I would do is I would definitely try to get an over-the-top reading, a middle-of-the-road reading, and then a very underplayed reading of any of the acting lines, and which, you know, just provided ammunition so that I could go back to editing and then really try to fine-tune it and see how it was working with the other scenes that have been previously shot. You know, a lot of it's, you know, it's not exactly rocket science, but it's it is certainly takes some, it's one of those things where you, when something's working, you know it, and when it's not, you've got to find a solution for it.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's just something that you feel. I mean, you feel when it's right, and you've hit
it. Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And you're working in this movie, speaking of performances, and there are great performances in the movie, with seasoned veterans and newbies, I mean, newcomers to the screen. Was that an interesting dynamic to see those the older and the newer generation play against each other?
Well, I think from my perspective, the word might be terrifying because, you know, we cast Chase Williamson, who played Dave. He came right out of University of Southern California, a drama school. And he had been in nothing. He'd not been in a movie, he'd not been in a TV series, been in nothing. And the way the scheduling worked out, he had to step in and do 8 pages of dialogue with Paul Giamatti on the very first day of shooting. And for a director, you know, I was just terrified that the movie was going to crash and burn that day. You know, that Chase would seize up, that it wouldn't work. And yet, kid has ice water in his veins. He's just so focused. And at the same time, we've got maybe the greatest actor working on the planet in Paul, who happens to be a really decent, nice, funny guy. And he just took Chase under his wing, and I think those scenes in the Chinese restaurant are some of the best things in the movie, best acting. It's just great.
Yeah, they're terrific, terrific scenes. Part of what amazes me, too, is how much you were able to accomplish on, I would imagine, a lower-end budget.
Yeah, sure.
Because this is independent filmmaking, but what was the trickiest effect to pull off in the movie for you?
Well, there were certainly, there were a lot of effects that were just open question marks for so long. You know, would we be able to find a way to make them work? And, for a while, it was that ghost door. Like, how are we going to make that thing shimmery and with her hand and make that thing where she comes in and we see her phantom limb, you know? But we found we had a plan, and it was implemented, and it worked out just great. So much of it was trial and error, like how are we going to have the meat pieces assembled, you know, into the monster? You know, for a while we were thinking, well, we'll just take a bunch of photos of it and do a digital thing where we move them around digitally and then they show up. But that was, you know, we did a test on that and it looked really bad. And so there, you know, we went back and did it the old-fashioned way with rubber pieces of meat and a bunch of fishing line, and we just got out there and, you know, and spent 2 days puppeting pieces of meat flying around the floor of the basement, and it came out just great. So it was really a function of, you know, a lot of times we'd have an idea how we'd do it, and sometimes it would work just fine, and other times it just wouldn't work well at all, and we'd have to start over.
Well, I'm thinking about the independent film and how it's changed from when you started, how it's kind of redefined itself. And a big part of that is with what's been happening with your movie, where you're releasing it on demand a month before it plays on theater screens. Does that kind of extra opportunity there excite you to get it in front of an audience?
Well, I'll be honest, I've kind of approached the thing a bit skeptically and with trepidation. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you some interesting early response that I've already had is that it just, you know, see, the only parallel I can really draw is back in the later 90s, I made a couple of Phantasm movies that had the dreaded curse of going direct to video. And back in those days, that was like as bad of a movie as you could have. If it went direct to video, it was probably a piece of junk and you were cursed forever, you know?
Yeah.
But when you go into this direct to video on demand, or, you know, like premium and ultra video on demand, there doesn't appear to be any baggage that comes with that. I'm so surprised how excited the fans were and fans of the book to be able to get the movie in an advanced window and get to see it, and it almost seemed to make it special, which was very cool, actually.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
The fact that we're following up with a theatrical run, you know, I think you're right. We're into a new age where the consumers of entertainment want the movie wherever they can get it, and in the, you know, the fashion that's most convenient. And some want to, you know, see it immediately on their iPod, and other ones want to go see it in a nice big theater with a big sound system. So
yeah, it's a brave new world.
There you go.
Just one last question, then I'll let
you
go. Sure.
Don't worry.
We're crazy about film score on this show,
and
your composer for John Dies at the End is someone, a frequent guest of ours, Brian Tyler. And I want to know about that collaboration between director and composer for you.
Well, listen, I had an absolutely magnificent experience working with Brian Tyler 9 years ago on Bubba Hotep. I mean, his score for that movie is just magical. And from the, you know, from the get-go, you know, as the time passed, of course, Brian's career has skyrocketed. I think right now he's composing Iron Man 3, so he's in the big time. And I was just hoping against hope that he might find a window and be able to come on board and help us with John. But it really made no sense for him to, because he can make, you know, huge amounts of money from the studios. So he really took a hit for us. He saw an early version of the movie, and he got it, of course. And, of course, his score is so wonderful in guiding us by the hand through it. Not only, you know, some very transcendental, you know, trip-type music, but he also came up with some really cool, you know, guitar-based heroic themes for John and Dave. And it was just a lot of fun music and for the Dr. Marconi. And he's just, John Williams is going to retire one of these days, and I believe Ryan is going to take on that mantle, because he's one of the greatest theme-driven composers there ever is. He's, you know, he can create, you know, memorable movie themes, but at the same time, he can also do super edgy, weird.
Yeah,
you know, I love him, and he's a great guy too. I can't say that.
Well, we love you, and we've been excited about talking to you because we love your movies, and it was a big thrill. Thank you so much.
Hey, that is so nice of you to say, and thanks. I really appreciate the support. I mean, we need it, and certainly appreciate it.
The director of Phantasm and Bubba Hotep.
I suppose you are wondering where you are.
I'm going to guess we're in an alternate universe of some kind.
Warns you to brandish your weapons.
Can I buy you a beer?
Lock your door.
What the? That's the accent, me.
And stay away.
Ooh.
From red meat. But whatever you do, don't spoil the ending.
I suppose you're wondering why I'm here.
I suppose you're wondering what I'm doing with this can of gasoline.
John dies at the end.
Dave, this is John. Where are you right now?
Where are you? Heaven?
Is there any way that you can steal my body?
Okay, that is Paul Giamatti and Don Coscarelli. Their new collaboration, John Dies at the End, is open now in select theaters, and it's available on demand everywhere. So thank them. Thank you both for joining us. That was a great pleasure to talk to both of them.
Awesome interviews. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you, too.
I need to see about Phantasm 2. I watched it with, like, the first summer I was home after college, and I watched that on cable. We had just gotten cable within the last year, and I watched it late at night. Man, what a sick film. That was a sick film.
The villain in that is just called the Tall Man. Is that what it is?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's the villain in all of the movies. So Angus Grimm.
Is he still living? Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's still around. He went to the Jeff Dyson premiere. I read, and so he's still around.
Still kicking it. I wonder if he carries that ball with him everywhere he goes.
I would imagine
he's got one, you know.
I'd play it up. If I played Carrie, I'd walk around with menstrual blood all over me. I mean, I'd play that part.
Well, speaking of Carrie.
Everywhere I go, yeah.
Speaking of Carrie, why don't we get into what's coming out this year?
Yeah, let's do that. First of all, I wanted to say that in a couple of weeks, actually closer than that, February 4th, what is that, a week from Monday, we'll start our Art of the Score series, which is a series of interviews with composers. And here's the final lineup. Fernando Velasquez, who did The Impossible and Mama.
Mm-hmm.
Our good buddy Austin Wintry.
I love him.
Up for a Grammy. I think that's the Sunday after, like it's 2 weeks from today, actually, the Grammys. And historically so, too, because he's the first nomination in their history for a video game score.
Wow.
And he's in that category with John Williams and Danny Elfman and all the biggies. I mean, our good buddy, man, like somebody that's been with us from almost the beginning.
Name that score, buddy. I mean,
I love that guy.
Carter Burwell, which is an interview that you did for us, Dean. He'll be with us. Tyler Bates, who worked a lot with Zack Snyder. Harold Faltermeyer. We finally got Harold Faltermeyer.
Oh, that's amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, we called him from in Germany, and we got him. So Bill Conti, David Shire.
Wow, Bill Conti. Oh, my God. And David Shire?
Yes.
This is crazy.
Randy Edelman. Bruce Broughton, Alan Silvestri.
Wow.
And then we'll be replaying some of our archived interviews with people like John. All those are new interviews, but the archives are John Debney, Mark Mancina, John Ottman, a great composer by the name of Jeff Beal, Trevor Rabin, Terrence Blanchard, Mark Isham, and Alexander Desplat, Howard Shore. So check, it'll be airing every weeknight. 8 p.m. will be an archived interview, and 10 p.m. will be a brand new interview.
Okay, that's awesome.
For the first 2 weeks of February. So
wow.
That's a big series coming up.
What a lineup.
I don't know. I just get whenever I get an idea to do a series or something, I just want to overdo the hell out of it.
And to your credit too, it's unbelievable. I mean, there can't be any place online where you can hear from this diverse group of people who are doing movie music like this.
Yeah, I hope not. And every show, you'll hear pieces of their film music too. I mean, there'll be like two or three tracks that they've done when they, you know, that they discuss, and so it'll be interesting. Okay, 2013 movies. First of all, let me ask you guys off the top of your head, what is the one movie you are most looking forward to in this new year?
I got one.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'll just go flat out and say Pacific Rim.
Holly Del Toro.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Is that like robots versus monsters?
But it's him and he. What was the last movie he directed that he actually directed? I know he produced Mama, but he. Hellboy 2?
It's hard for me to say because I get confused with his producing and directing.
They did the remake of also Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, but he only produced that with the guy with Nick Nunzetta from Chud.com. But and he produced Mama, which is actually a pretty good film if you want to know the God's honest truth. But Pacific Rim is the one that really of all the big movies, you know, the big event movies, is the one that really is at the top, just because it's Del Toro, and it's just he's got such a vivid imagination.
And this was interesting how it came about, too, because he'd been struggling for a long time to get that In the Mountains of Madness or whatever made, and he just could not get it done.
No, it just never happened.
For years he tried to get it done. And then Pacific Rim comes in, and it seemed like it happened pretty darn quickly for him. Yeah, this massive movie. So, yeah.
It does look like just a masterful monster movie. I mean, that's what I'm so excited about. It really seems to get the size and the scope and the scale of everything correctly. And I'm really excited about that film too.
Yeah, hopefully it won't be like Battleship.
No, I don't think it'll be like that. I think there's a film that all three of us are eager to see in the next couple of weeks. Side Effects. I think we're all very eager to see. That's the next film I'm really looking forward to.
No question. I mean, with Soderbergh and Rooney Mara, tremendous supporting cast, including Ann Dowd and so many others. I mean,
right. Oh yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. So
is this the last theatrical movie that he's going to direct?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that's a. I don't see him giving up directing anytime soon. Because
he said this is his last year.
Could he be convinced to come back to make Elmore Leonard's Road Dogs, which features some of the characters from Out of Sight and other Elmore Leonard novels? But could he be convinced just to come? I don't see Soderbergh as a restless type. Obviously, he is in many ways, he's up there with. As far as American directors go, he's one of the most prolific directors we have right now. I don't think I've ever seen anyone as curious and excited about the medium as he is, to be very honest with you. You could say, he's only other directors I can think of that put out such an output would be Fassbender and Takashi Miike in Japan, who's still living and making...
And Woody Allen, that makes... Yeah.
Well, Woody Allen is in a class by himself. We talked about that last night. We need the Woody Allen podcast channel. But
I saw his new movie, and I kind of liked it, To Rome with Love.
It was all right. Yeah.
It's all right. He sounds like he's very sincere when he says he's retiring, though. And that doesn't mean he'll never come back. But he seems like somebody that doesn't necessarily need it. I mean, he doesn't thrive on the attention or the PowerPoint or any of that.
No,
so
right.
I would think that he could very well be one of those guys that disappears for a long time. Just because Side Effects might be his last theatrical movie in a long time, but he still has the Liberace movie on HBO.
Exactly. For me, my number one movie that I'm looking forward to is Inside Llewyn Davis, the Coen Brothers movie. Because I just saw the trailer online, and I was kind of blown away by the trailer. The period detail in it, I love that it takes place during the folk music, thing of the 60s, and it has original songs in it, which I think is very unusual and great. And there's nothing I can really say except when I saw the preview, I was like, oh, my God, this looks like it's just totally made for me. and so I'm totally looking forward to that. You know, out of total curiosity, the big, huge tentpole movie of the year that I'm most looking forward to would be Baz Luhrmann's The Great Gatsby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious to see how it turned out, you know. I mean, I don't know what the hell it's going to be like, you know. And so...
Well, that comes out this summer, and that's interesting, The Great Gatsby, because I can see that going either way. I can see that being a tremendous success or one of the biggest bombs of the year, actually, too.
Me too.
That's a good point. We talked about that last night, too. I think that's, you know, it could go either way.
But, you know, that's Baz Luhrmann for you. I mean, he's really a go-for-broke filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So,
yeah.
And he's had success on both ends of the extreme, you know. Australia wasn't any kind of big barn burner, but, I mean, his bold visions, more often than not, have paid off for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a curiosity. I think it's a shame that he doesn't make more movies, but I can see. I liked Australia, although everyone who I knew was Australian hated that movie.
I kind of liked
right.
it. I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was embarrassing in any way.
No, I didn't think so either. I like what he was doing. I wish he would make more movies. This will be like the first movie in what, 5 years, 5 or 6
yeah.
years.
Yeah, because he's been stuck doing this movie for the
yeah,
long.
I mean, and let's be very honest,
yeah.
There's never been a really great, version of The Great
no.
Gatsby. So
no,
could
there's
be
never
a,
been
could
one
work.
That was completely successful.
And
it's
I have
true,
to say
but...
something, DiCaprio looks the part, at least from the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
If that means anything, he does look the part. And it's Baz Luhrmann, so of course we'll give it a shot. The more I'm looking at the release, some of the movies that are coming out just within the next just a couple of weeks, actually, there are some curiosities. I am curious about the Tina Fey Paul Rudd movie, Admission. I've been seeing a lot of trailers for that.
I saw the trailer for that, you know, and the movie itself looks like it might be fine. But the trailer did not work well at all. Like, every joke in the trailer was incredibly lame. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like maybe they're just selling it badly in the trailer.
I bet that's a good point.
Because the charm of Tina Fey and Paul Rudd, you know, in a romantic-type comedy,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that could work.
No, I agree with that. Because even before I saw the trailer, I had a completely different idea of what the movie was going to be. And then you watch
mm-hmm.
the trailer, and I think we can figure out what the story is. We'll see. I like Tina Fey, and I like Date Night a lot. I thought she and Steve Carell worked very well off each other. So you know,
I'm still not sold on Tina Fey as being a movie star. That's my problem with Tina Fey.
There's a lot of truth. I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying, Dean. It's you see that. What was the other Baby Mama?
Yeah.
And that, by all points, should have worked. Her and Amy Poehler in a movie together? I mean, oh, my God. And it's just sort of half-cocked. I mean...
You know what, though? It takes time, though. It depends... I mean, it really does take time, because it took forever for George Clooney to be considered a movie star. Because he was the TV guy, and he was, like, one failed attempt after another. And finally, when he started doing stuff of integrity,
mm-hmm.
not stuff that he felt like he had to do to become a movie star... Not like Peacemaker, Batman and Robin, not that ilk movie, but stuff like Syriana and the type of 70s movie
Out of
that
Sight.
He loved.
Out of Sight, really.
Out of Sight. Out of
well,
Sight was
well,
the turning point for
yeah.
him. He became
well,
a movie
I just
star.
Wonder that, you know, I don't see Tina Fey having those same opportunities or even that same
yeah.
bent. So it's like,
well, stick
you know,
Tina Fey in, stick Tina Fey in a Lee Daniels film. And maybe that'll...
There's another...
She'll be the next Precious.
There's two other films just, like, coming out in the next couple of weeks, and if I'm missing... there's Dead Man Down with Colin Farrell, which is a thriller directed by the director who did the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo movies, which looks like it could be interesting. And then there's Stoker with Nicole Kidman.
Stoker interests me, yes.
Yeah, I mean, Stoker is, I would actually say, of the spring, of the early spring... The big art house movie.
Mm.
I think so. And then there's all the movies The Rock's in, G.I. Joe.
Well, and you know what Stoker is majorly influenced by, and actually the director who did the original Old Boy, he actually said this. He said, you know, I was most influenced by De Palma when I made Stoker.
It looks that way. Oh my God!
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say a Spike Lee movie.
No.
Well,
but Spike Lee's version
DePalma,
of Old Boy. Spike Lee's version of Old Boy comes out in October. Mm-hmm. And that's Josh Brolin leading that. And they say that that's an incredibly intense movie. From what I've heard from early word of mouth, that it's very intense.
Well,
it'll be good to see him doing another movie.
Yeah, of course.
Well, speaking of De Palma, you know, of course we have Passion, which I've already seen, and that's prime De Palma. That is for De Palma fans, and, you know, I don't know of a release date yet for that, but I'm hoping that that will be coming out sometime this year.
I think it's this first quarter. I think it's probably March, April. And as soon as it does, I hope he's not filming the Paterno thing. I hope he leaves time for press because he said that he'd come back. I mean, he told you
that.
So,
I watched Love Crime in December, what it's based on. That's actually a pretty good movie. You're watching it and you're just like thinking, oh yeah, De Palma could do wonders with this. I mean,
yeah.
And from what I understand, there's some big changes. I haven't seen Love Crime, but there's some big changes in it that actually deepen the film. From what I've heard from the people who've actually seen mm-hmm. those films. Also, another film that I've already seen this year that absolutely needs to be on everybody's list, which will come out sometime in the spring. It's called Frances Ha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't wait
from
to see it.
Noah Baumbach, starring Greta Gerwig, co-written by the both of them. And that's just brilliant and really great fun. And I totally expect her to be in the Oscar running next year. You know, if it's
you need to see the new Woody Allen movie, dude, because Greta Gerwig's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's To Rome with Love.
Yeah, I've seen it, and she's always good. And
I actually had a thought watching her in that movie. I thought that she and Ellen Page should have switched parts. Actually, when I was watching that movie,
I feel the same way about that too. I feel the same way because I could totally believe her in the other part more than Ellen Page.
Yeah.
Let me bring up some I want to go away from. Like the big huge movies, and then talk about like the movies that are being put out by like the great directors, you know.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Of course we've got To the Wonder, you know, the new Terrence Malick film, and then we've possibly got Knight of Cups as well from him. So
mm-hmm.
I would expect that. Yeah,
there's no way we're getting two Terrence Malick movies in one year.
No way. But To the Wonder is definitely on the list for me. Also, Before Midnight, which is getting great reviews.
Out of Sundance, yeah.
Yeah, the new Richard Linklater collaboration with Ethan Hawke and Delpy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually getting the best reviews out of the three movies. It seems to me that everybody is talking about how it's the capper to the whole thing.
Yes, it's like the American Reunion out of the three, I think.
Right, exactly.
I'm very excited to see that because I saw both of those films. I mean, this could be one of the great romantic series
After Burning Man, I'm like, I was never a fan of Linklater before. I mean, his movies never really spoke that very much to me, but after Bernie, I'm racing out to see any Linklater movie.
Are you going to go back and reassess his career? Because I think that you've missed something.
Well, I've seen most of his movies, but actually I haven't seen any of the Before movies. So before Midnight, I'll go back and watch Sunrise and Sunset. So.
They're very, very, very good movies. I have Before Sunrise on a VHS if you want to borrow it.
Okay, I'll drive over there tonight.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure I can't get it here anywhere. Yeah, I'll drive up to Maryland, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me bring up some others. There's Edgar Wright's new movie with Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and
mm-hmm.
Martin Freeman, which is like, I love that Martin Freeman's part of it, too. It's called The World's End. And, you know, just the combination of those three guys to
right,
me,
no,
it's like, mm-hmm. I don't even need to know what the movie is about. To know that I want to see this, you know.
Well, Jerry talked to me about this last night. What were you saying about it last night, Jerry?
Which one?
The World's End.
No, the other one I was talking about was the other one This is the End with James Franco and all those guys playing themselves, Seth Rogen and Danny McBride and the End of the World in Los Angeles. And they all play themselves, and it looks hysterical. I hope it's hysterical, but I don't know.
Well, we've also got possibility, you know, it's always possible that these are going to be pushed back, you know, but we've also got The Zero Theorem from Terry Gilliam,
mm-hmm.
starring Christoph Waltz and Matt Damon.
Now,
so,
shooting that.
Wow,
is that a Go project? Is she shooting that?
He is shooting that, and it is a Go project. So,
okay.
It's difficult to tell with some of these. Now, this is going to be one. Here's another one that I'm sure is going to come out this year. Steve McQueen's new movie with Chiwetel Ejiofor, I can't say his name, in the lead, with Paul Giamatti and Brad Pitt, Michael Fassbender, Paul Dano, and Quiven Wallace, called 12 Years a Slave.
Mm-hmm.
That's about, down. Yeah, they've
yeah.
shot that. Yeah.
So that's going to be something. Also, another film this year that I think everybody is looking forward to this. Everybody wants to see this. Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity.
And that finally got like an October release date. Didn't
yeah,
it?
No, they want
it's
to
like
see that.
Like Clooney and Sandra Bullock, and I've been hearing about this thing for a couple of years now, and like because the first time I heard about it was Clooney was talking about it when he was doing Oscar press for The Descendants,
mm-hmm.
and he said, look, I've seen some of this, and honest to God, it's unlike anything you've ever seen, and I'm hearing back stuff like it's all like. It's like the opening is like a 30-minute shot or something,
yeah.
like an unbroken shot.
Oh, he's
and
good
they,
at that. I mean,
they say that the high point. It's an outer space kind of movie with George Clooney and Sandra Bullock. They say that the high point of it is absolutely Sandra Bullock's performance. They say that she kills it in this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great to hear. You know, we also though. Have speaking of great directors, Neil Blomkamp's film, you know, who did District 9.
Yeah.
He has
yeah.
not. Is it Elysium with Matt Damon?
Right. Yeah, and Jodie Foster. Yeah.
And that Jodie Foster and his go-to guy, Sharto Copley, and that's going to be fascinating. Because I mean, District 9 is just such a revelation, and this should be fascinating to watch. You also have. Though, besides, obviously, you have The Hobbit Part 2, and you have the next Hunger Games movie, you have Ender's Game is finally coming out as a movie this year. Orson Scott Card's Ender's Game, which is a huge, huge book. I didn't read it in school, but everyone after me read it, and that's directed by Gavin Hood, and I forget who's playing Ender Wiggum, but that's a big, like, a young adult novel. It's finally coming to the screen. Oh, we have Attack of the Clones in 3D. Oh, boy. Speaking of Star Wars earlier.
Yeah. And Top Gun 3D in March, right?
Yeah, yeah. And Paranormal Activity 5.
See that volleyball scene in 3D. Come on. playing with the boys in 3D. Good old Kenny Loggins. Have you ever seen a more homoerotic film in 3D? It would be great. I'm sorry. Did
Can
I just kill conversation?
See it together?
yeah. That would be great. And then of course, in a couple of weeks, Die Hard, the fifth Die Hard.
Oh, that looks like
Hard.
A lot of fun. I mean,
yeah.
And Bruce Willis is going to have a great. I mean, a big year with that. Maybe the G.I. Joe sequel. I don't know why I say that, but maybe that because of The Rock's in it and Bruce Willis, but also. Red 2 comes out, and
I'm very excited about
Red
2.
Yeah, that
2.
Looks like a lot of fun. So
because the director for Red 2 is Dean Pariseau, who did Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, so
and
I mean you know that's going to be good though. I mean,
that's a perfect matchup.
Well,
yeah.
they added Anthony Hopkins into the mix too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think he plays the baddie in it, the bad guy in it.
Oh, cool.
Not sure, but yeah, so that should be. You know, interesting enough. And also, in terms of, like, awards, I mean, Dean has been mentioning some that could be up for awards, but Clooney has one at the end of the year that he's directing and starring in called The Monuments Men,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Right.
And what's the plot of that? What does that concern? I know
God,
it's...
God, I don't...
Well,
I
basically, don't. You know, in a way, it's kind of a... to me, it sounds like a kind of a remake of a John Frankenheimer movie from the mid-60s called The Train, which was about...
It does, right.
It's the race to save a bunch of classic paintings are on the way to Berlin on a Nazi-driven train.
Right.
And so... It's got Matt Damon in it and Kate Blanchett. So that's going to be something that's quite interesting. I don't quite like the title, but I'm very fascinated to see the film.
Yeah, just stick a Nazi in something in the title
Daniel Craig,
in the description and
Bill
get it off.
Murray,
if you've never seen The Train,
oh, that's a great film.
That's a movie that can easily be gotten, and that's a very exciting movie with Burt Lancaster in the lead role and Paul Scofield is the lead as the lead Nazi in it. So that's a movie that, you know, if you want to see what, you know, if you want to do some research on the Monuments Men, you could easily see The Train and get some kind of idea of what's going to happen. Also, we should mention The Butler. With Forest Whitaker and Oprah Winfrey and a cast of thousands, and it covering 12 years, decades in the life of a butler working in the White House.
So you have all the stunt casting for who are playing all the presidents, like Cusack playing Nixon. And as I understand it, Cusack's the only one that gets a curse word in the movie. Lee Daniels just was talking about the butler in a recent interview, and he said, you know, I felt like my hands were tied behind my back because I wasn't able to curse in this movie. I wasn't able to do any weird stuff like have Nicole Kidman pee on anyone. And he was like, so I didn't know if that was a minus, because it almost sounded like he was not endorsing his own movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's Nancy Reagan's played by Jane Fonda, which is like...
That's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. It's Alan Rickman playing Ronald Reagan. So
Yeah,
the casting in that movie is strange. It's something that has to be seen.
And
also,
we've also got Jurassic Park 3D. It's coming out in 3D.
That might benefit from 3D, I think. You know, I think that could actually be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right, I just ruined the show.
We have
big sequels coming out, though. Star Trek. We have Star Trek. We have other big movies, like we have the reboots, like The Man of Steel and World War Z.
Iron Man,
but nothing. I think, Jamie, you'll agree with this. Anchorman is the big sequel, more so than The Hangover 3.
I cannot wait. And that's a Christmas release. That's on the schedule for, like, Christmas Day or something.
It says December 20th. You know where I'll be December 20th, guys. That's where I'll be. Sorry.
I can't wait. I just watched that original movie again the other night, and I laughed so hard. The movie's just genuinely funny to me. And Man of Steel is, like, a big question mark. I'm sure that movie will do great business, but... And I hope they do it well. I'm not sold on Zack Snyder necessarily, but maybe this will be the one that'll turn me, you know, to him. But.
We also have two White House movies, White House Down and Olympus Has Fallen, about where they take over the White House, I guess, is the storyline.
I know White House Down is what, that's Jamie Foxx, right?
I think, I'm not positive, let me check here.
He's playing the president, I think.
Channing Tatum, Jamie Foxx, Jason Clarke, Maggie Gyllenhaal, James Woods. Oh my God! It's just like everyone is in this movie.
That's an Emmerich movie, isn't it?
That's Roland Emmerich. Oh my God! The White House will be destroyed probably again. The storyline concerns a paramilitary takeover of the White House. God, he really does hate the president.
I don't know. The second I heard that plot line, I got like the feeling of Air Force One, and then I thought.
Me too.
Then I thought, you know,
both
or even,
of them. All right,
even
Olympus
lower
has
on the.
Fallen.
Even lower on the ladder, something like The Shadow Conspiracy.
But here you have Olympus Has Fallen with Gerard Butler, which is directed by Antoine Fuqua. You know, this is another one where the White House is taken over by terrorists. So it's like the year of the two volcano movies, the two asteroid movies. We have two White House movies.
The father and son switching body movies.
Yeah, I mean, we got that with White in the White House this year.
Let me mention two more sequels. Well, one is a prequel, Monsters University, the big entry this year from Pixar, which is a prequel to one of my very favorite, like right next to Toy Story, one of my very favorite of their films, Monsters Inc. And so, you know, I just love those two lead characters, and you know, I just can't wait for that. But also, I want to point to, and I hope this is still happening. I don't know that it is, but I'm really hoping for a Bad Santa Part 2 this year, because I do want to see what happens to those characters.
Oh yeah,
character.
Definitely.
You know, so I mean, I hope that happens. Can I mention, when you watch that original movie now,
You know, you think, you know, Bernie Mac and John Ritter are no longer with us.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, what a funny movie.
To move on. It will be easy to move on, because if you don't have the mall as the central place, then it can make sense.
No, I mean, all you really need is Billy Bob Thornton and the midget.
Tony Cox. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so here's some big directors that have movies coming out. They're definitely coming out this year. Lars von Trier has his new movie Nymphomaniac coming out with Charlotte Gainsbourg and Stellan Skarsgård.
Group screening for that one.
this is supposedly his movie where he shows it all. You know, he shows like real life sex going on. So this is something he's been wanting to make for a little while, and you know it's going to make a big splash when it lands. Also, Maps to the Stars by David Cronenberg. Always.
Oh, okay, cool.
Always excited to see new Cronenberg. And then one of the things that I'm most looking forward to is a movie. I don't like it that it uses a title that I already know, which is called Night Moves. But it's by Kelly Reichardt, one of my favorite directors, who did Old Joy and Wendy and Lucy and what was that Western thing that she did last year, a couple of years ago? Anyway.
Oh, Meat's Cut Off.
Yeah, Meat's Cut Off. This is about environmental activists planning to blow up a dam, and it's with Dakota Fanning, Jesse Eisenberg, and Peter Sarsgaard. And, you know, I'm always looking forward to anything that she does. Also, one more in this group is Oliver Hirschbiegel. His new movie, if you remember, he did Downfall.
What's his new movie?
His new movie is Diana, about the last days of the Princess Diana, with Naomi Watts in the lead.
All right.
Oh my
right.
God! They'll make a movie. They'll make this a YouTube video too that they'll parody. Oh my God!
Yeah, but.
Yes.
But,
yes,
but what?
Yes.
But what? I'm wondering how brave it's going to be, because
for the
longest time, like years ago, when we first interviewed John Badham, he was talking about he was working on a script of the conspiracy around Diana's death.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if this is an offshoot of that project.
That's a good question. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. You know, but
because they made
a
documentary. They made a documentary on it, apparently, and the royal family squashed it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's never seen the light of day.
Mm.
So I don't know how controversial this movie will be, and if they're prepared for a fight.
Mm. And then there's also two movies about Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks. There's a narrative movie that's directed by Bill Condon with Benedict Cumberbatch in the lead.
He looks perfect for some reason. I think he looks perfect.
He does. And then there's a documentary, I think, by Alex Gibney called We Tell Secrets that's coming out. So we've got two Julian Assange movies coming out this year. Also, interesting things from directors like Phil Alden Robinson, who's doing The Angriest Man in Brooklyn with Mila Kunis and Peter Dinklage and Robin Williams. And then there's J.C. Chandor, you know, who was nominated for an Oscar last year for Margin Call for writing the screenplay. His directorial debut, his next directorial effort is coming out, called All Is Lost, starring Robert Redford. And then you've also got Errol Morris doing his first narrative film in a really long time called Freezing People Is Easy, starring Paul Rudd as a man investigating being frozen after he dies. And this is set in the mid-60s. So,
speaking of that, though, you have two. You actually have two interesting other movies that I think that will come out next year. On the Reluctant Fundamentalist by
yeah,
the pioneer who did Selim Bombay and The Namesake. But you also then have, I think, and I thought this would come out last year, but it's not, Deepa Mehta's adaptation of Salman Rushdie's Midnight's Children, which is supposed to be awesome from what I hear. So I would love to see that.
Well, there's there's the filmmaker that we had on the show, and it's the one filmmaker that Roger Ebert champions more than any other among the new blood. I mean, outside of Werner Herzog, is Ramin Barani. And he's got, he did Goodbye Solo was his last movie.
Yeah, that was a good, I love that movie.
And he did like Man Push Cart. But he's got a new movie called At Any Price with Dennis Quaid. And I've heard that it's like a career-making performance for Dennis Quaid. And I remember the last time they said a career-making performance from Dennis Quaid. It was that movie Soldier or something. Soldier.
Yeah.
It was something
like
that. And Zac Efron's in it, too. But they say it's a very, very good movie. That's April 26th, the same day that Michael Bay's quote-unquote lower-budgeted art film comes out, Pain and Gain, with The Rock and Mark Wahlberg.
Tony
Shalhoub. Yeah, because when you think, like, Beefcake with The Rock and Mark Wahlberg, you think Tony Shalhoub. Like, especially Tony Shalhoub. Let's Tony Shalhoub. That's like before they go out and work out, I'm sure they say, okay, guys, let's Tony Shalhoub up. Anyway.
A lot of people will be looking forward to Nicholas Winding Refn's Only God Forgives, which will be his follow-up with Ryan Gosling to Drive.
Speaking of Ryan, the Place Beyond the Pines with Ryan Gosling and Bradley Cooper should be coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that looks good.
Then we have the reuniting of Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper in Serena in the early part of the year, too.
Okay,
so
good.
I'll
be busy. I'm going to need to rob a bank to see all these movies, but okay.
Kick-Ass 2, the return of Jim Carrey in Kick-Ass 2.
Now, Kick-Ass 2, it's interesting because Kick-Ass did not like the box office on fire.
Right.
So this is very interesting. But I the second time I saw Kick-Ass, I liked it a lot more, so I have high hopes for it.
The Lone Ranger, do you think, and that has like The Lone Ranger and Despicable Me 2, which actually for the first time I'll be going to see an animated movie at the movie theater because Al Pacino does the voice of the villain in Despicable Me 2.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
And all these years I've been thinking, why don't they get Pacino to do an animated movie? It's like he's got the perfect voice for it. So I'm like, okay, I'll go see Despicable Me 2. But it comes out the same day as Lone Ranger. The Lone Ranger, a terribly expensive movie. I mean, this movie is massive.
Like, yeah, did you ever see the other big budget movie they made in 1980?
Oh, no, yeah, but The Legend of the Long Ranger.
Yeah,
I saw that.
I have a feeling, and then Johnny Depp is playing Tonto. I mean, it could work, but they've made it so, like, they're trying to make it so hip and cool and everything.
You know what I see when I see that movie, Lone Ranger, like the trailer? I see Wild Wild West, and especially since it comes out the 4th of July weekend, just like that one did, I think that we're going to have a Wild Wild West-sized bomb.
Oh, I think
actually.
I
spell that, too, and I think it's very bizarre, by the way, that Johnny Depp actually plays Toronto, who's not supposed to be the star, he's supposed to be supporting. So
I know,
like,
it's
why,
just a weird.
That's already bizarre to me.
You know, not everything needs to be rebooted or The Lone Ranger was not. You know, if you came to me, if I was a producer or a studio chief, said, "Hey, let's make a new version of Lone Ranger," I'd be like, you know, here, some crack, go smoke it, come back to me when you're done.
You know what, though? And, I mean, call me crazy, but I think that at the end of the summer we'll see movies like the Iron Man 3 and Man of Steel taking the box office reins for the biggest movies of the summer. But I think, like, right up there with them will be the Smurfs 2. I mean, because that first Smurfs movie made a bungalow.
Oh, yeah. No, it did. You're right. I mean,
so Smurfs 2 will be one of the biggest hits of the year, believe it or not. I mean, it really will be.
That's embarrassing.
Well,
but you're right.
Kids got to go to the movie, too, I guess.
I guess so. But, you know, I think that, you know, since the show is coming to a close, we haven't mentioned one of the biggest movies that's going to come out this year, which will come out at the end of the year, and I'm sure will be up for Oscars next year, and that is The Wolf of Wall Street, the new
Yeah, that's film. Right. Yeah, that will definitely,
you know. What
well,
do you have to say about that?
Looking at the lineup, it's been a long shoot, actually, The Wolf of Wall Street, but it's got a really interesting cast because it's DiCaprio, it's Jonah Hill, it's Jean Dujardin, it's Matthew McConaughey in a Martin Scorsese movie. It's photographed by Rodrigo Prieto because he doesn't have his usual Robert Richardson because Richardson
right.
was stuck in reshoots for Django. So it's a new cinematographer for him, and it's I'm sure it's going to be like a one-off with him. You know, and it's the one that DiCaprio's so exhausted with now that he wants to quit acting for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I told Jerry about this last night. There's one of those Photoshop deals online, like a picture of DiCaprio up top, and it says, "I've made three movies in 2 years. I'm exhausted. I'm quitting acting for a while." And then right below it, there's a picture of Nicolas Cage saying, "That's just adorable." That's right.
Well, we also
the new
got
Sin
the
City.
Groups, too. Do you remember the new animated film with Nicolas Cage as the lead voice in it called The Groots?
Well, I'm sure he has like four or five movies out this year, Nicolas Cage.
I mean, he probably has like 20 movies because he's got to pay off that taxes and everything. So, I mean.
The new Sin City is out in October. Carrie, they pushed that from next month to October. So it'll be closer to Halloween, I guess. I hope that doesn't mean the movie's not any good.
I think it's smart to move that to Halloween, though. I mean, that's a very good. I think that's a good move, especially since they seem to think it's a good movie. So,
the new Ridley Scott movie, the one that it's like a Michael Fassbender and Brad Pitt, and it's got a great, great cast. It's a Cormac McCarthy. I think it's his only original screenplay, McCarthy.
Oh, the Counselor?
The Counselor, yeah.
The Counselor.
That comes out in November. Yeah. November 15th is when that comes out. And if you remember, he had to leave the shooting of that movie to attend his brother's funeral.
Right, right.
So that postponed it for a little bit. But that looks like a big high-profile Oscar contender, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then what is Matthew McConaughey's movie where he plays the AIDS patient? That's going to be something that's going to...
The Dallas Buyers Club, yes.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be something that's going to... And by the way, I need to say this too. I'm sort of really looking forward to movie 43 because I'm just so fascinated by this film.
I can't wait to hear what you say about it. I saw it. It's funny. I don't care what Richard Roper says. I couldn't stop laughing because I couldn't believe it. They actually went ahead with this. It's so fucking ridiculous.
Is there a story to this movie? Because I cannot figure it out. I think the trailer has just like completely
flummoxed
me.
I think they just wanted to make a Kentucky Fried movie for our time. Some of the things I think are very funny. Some of the things I think are just incredibly stupid. But it's very hit and miss. I don't think it's as bad as Richard Roper has made it out to be, or anybody else. It has its moments, and then it has other moments that are really cringe-inducing. You're just like, oh, my God, how did they get these people to do this?
Okay. Well,
December.
You know,
December,
that'll be a curiosity.
John Turteltaub has a new movie called Last Vegas, and it's like, I guess it's like another old geezer movie living their youth. It's a Las Vegas movie with Michael Douglas and De Niro and two other older actors. Morgan Freeman.
I appeal to me because I'm an old geezer now, so I guess
Morgan
that's why I like it.
Morgan Freeman and then somebody else. I can't remember the fourth cast member. And then Saving Mr. Banks, the movie where Tom Hanks plays Walt Disney, opens up December 20th.
Oh, wow,
yeah.
Okay.
And then there's,
so
you know, that movie,
47,
and actually Paul Giamatti's in Saving Mr. Banks. There's a movie, 47 Ronin, that's had so much problems, but that finally comes out Christmas Day. It's the
Keanu Reeves, right?
Samurai movie, yeah. And that's the same day that we see Jack Ryan, the new Jack Ryan movie with Chris Pine and Kevin Costner.
Okay, mm-hmm. It could be, these could be, these, some of these sound very, they could be promising, so who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows, yeah. And I'm sure there's going to be some sleepers in there that we don't know about yet that'll crop up.
Yeah, no, I hope so.
And yeah. We didn't mention Oz, the great and powerful Sam Raimi.
Can I say something? I like The Wizard of Oz, but I'm not, as I get older, I just really don't care, kind of, almost, about it.
I understand that.
Don't get me wrong, I understand its importance, and I saw it so much growing up, but I don't, now they want to make this one, like, I guess, it's got an interesting cast and everything, and it's obviously, this is, I guess, based on the first book, But I just, part of me is just doesn't really care. I hate to say that, but it's just,
How do we feel about World War Z, by the way?
If World War Z had come out when the book, if World War Z came out before The Walking Dead, it would have had a greater shot. I think that people are just, might be so burned out on zombies.
Uh-huh.
It seems like it's well behind the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's a great book, and it's by Max Brooks, who wrote the Zombie Survival Guide and World War Z, he was well ahead of the curve. I think this is a case where the zombie thing has been done so much, no pun intended, to death. It might be just.
I'm looking forward to it, actually.
I want to see it. Don't get me wrong, but I'm curious to see how it plays out. But I just think it might be.
Because we haven't really had. Yeah, we've had a lot of zombie stuff, but not that I can remember any kind of epic zombie movie. And this,
no
this looks
big
like
screen
a,
stuff. No big
yeah.
screen.
I mean, Romero
big
consistently shoots himself in the foot with every new zombie movie he does. So, I mean,
yeah.
But talk about a problematic production. I mean, World War Z has had some problems.
Yeah.
The studio believed in it enough to budget out reshoots for a whole new ending.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a sign of encouragement, you know, as much as potential discouragement. We got a call, an 805 area code. If I'm able to pick it up, I'm picking you up. 805?
Yes, hello?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. Oh, my God, I can't believe you guys are on the radio right now. No, this is awesome, and you guys are talking about World War Z. I just finished that book like 2 days ago.
How'd you like it?
I love the book, and I saw the trailer for the movie, and I'm really disappointed in that.
Yeah, because
I
don't see how you could make the book. Well, at least they didn't try to make the book into a movie. So
it's one of those books where maybe you shouldn't make a movie about it.
I agree with that. I'm all with you there.
Yeah, Don, are you on or?
Is it too hard to? It just seems too big to make a movie out of, or what is it?
It just seemed like if you've read the book, there's parts of it where it just seems so intimate, like the interviews and stuff. It just seems like that'd be really hard to capture.
Interviews and stuff. I mean, it's a journal, more like a journalistic you know, it's a journal, really, of all this whole thing that's going on. I mean, there's a lot of different stories in the book that aren't going to be in the film.
That's kind of what I'd be expecting, is like somebody sitting down, you know, interviewing somebody who is telling this story of, you know, what part in the book, you know, it is, and just acting that out. And that you could see it in their face and how they, you know, how they acted out on screen. Like, that to me would be better than actually seeing it redone and, like, you know, with a bunch of people running as zombies and stuff like that.
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
Do you think they're just going to abandon that part of the just sort of the telling of the story?
Oh, I think that's gone. I think that's been jettisoned from the trailer.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I don't want to take up too much time, but I want to say that Bubba Ho-Tep is one of the best movies ever made.
Okay,
cool.
I agree.
I'm not kidding. I love that movie so much. You have no idea. Don was
on the show earlier, and with like his, we started talking to him like the first half hour of the show.
Okay, I just logged on and I saw you guys were on and I freaked out and I grabbed my phone. So I'll go back and listen to it. And if Paul's still on, Paul's one of the best actors I've ever fucking seen. He's great in John Adams. He's great in Howard Stern's movie. And I'm pissed off that he doesn't have a fucking Academy Award right now.
We feel the same way, dude. He's one of the greats, man. And he saves so many movies that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
He's the most valuable player in a lot of stuff.
Now,
it's
I read
so
online.
About John Adams too. It's so true about John Adams. He's great. He's fantastic in that.
Oh,
he's
great in that.
For that, so you know.
Real quick, I read online that Paul was going to play the Colonel in a prequel to Bubba Ho-Tep. Did they touch base on that at all? Or I'll go back and listen to it. But.
Bubba Nosferatu, and it's still something that they definitely want to do. And actually, he and Don Coscarelli met first over that movie. And for whatever reason, they couldn't get it financed, but they could get John Dies at the end financed, so they ended up working on that. But they definitely have plans to rejoin for Bubba Nosferatu as soon as it's financed.
Is there any word on Bruce Campbell playing Elvis on it or no?
I don't know, but I would imagine so.
Yeah, I would think so.
Right. Yeah. All right, guys, thank you so much.
All right, no problem.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate
you
calling in. Thank you.
Yep,
absolutely.
All righty, sir. Bye-bye. Okay, guys. That's the show tonight.
All right.
The
awesome.
SAG Awards in a matter of minutes. You know, what's so ironic to me is that I would think, like, actors especially would be so, like, insecure about the word SAG. And yet that's their big award ceremony. Yeah? All right. So enjoy that tonight. And we're off next Sunday because it's Super Bowl time.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
But we'll decide when we do our next show together.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
All right.
Have a good one.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
See ya.